Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Good, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You know, I have to tell you, Justin, sometimes we have people that write in while they're listening to us. One of the things I hear or I read is that I'm not nice enough to you when you politely ask me how I'm doing.
Oh my gosh.
And then it's funny, this has happened, I don't know how many times, but then they'll write back while they're listening further. And they'll say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make it sound like you weren't nice, Aaron, but sometimes when you respond, it's kind of hard to read you.
Just so the audience knows, Aaron is one of the most kind people on the planet, and he's super kind to me, even when I'm a spazzo fool. So yeah, he's always kind to me, and our intro is just what people want to hear, and it's okay.
Well, no, the funny part is for a while there, I would get a little confused. I'm like, why are you asking me how I'm doing? You had already known this is how you set up the show at the beginning. And I'm like, you already know how I'm doing. So those older episodes reflect me not being on the same page as you. Also, just to clear things up, I'm getting questions from people about our Patreon and about Wondery Plus. Wondery Plus is excellent because if you join it, you get ad-free episodes from the Wondery shows.
Everything on their network.
And if you're just primarily a fan of Generation Y and want ad-free and extra content, then check out our Patreon. The Patreon is where we put up extra episodes that you won't find on our main feed. It's patreon.com/Generation Y.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So, Aaron, we've covered a lot of police officers that are killed on the line of duty. And a lot of the times it's been, was it homicide or was it suicide? Case in point, the Sean Drenth case or the Joe Glinowitz case. And it's really sad to know that a job, an occupation can drive somebody to suicide, especially when it comes to police officers who are probably underpaid. And they know that if they die in the line of duty, their family, their surviving family, will get benefits. But if they take their own life, sometimes there's a question there, depending on the insurance coverage or whatever the individual police department has, things can change. So it causes this behavior of, I have to die in the line of duty, but I want my family to be taken care of. It's sad that officers feel like they can't seek help. They can't go to their supervisor. They can't go talk to a therapist or a psychiatrist because they're afraid they're going to be inactivated. Their gun and badge are going to be taken away from them. Thus, they're not going to get paid and their family starves. It's a never-ending vicious cycle that hopefully is getting better. But I know that we had actually done a pilot TV show a while back, and there was a therapist and expert there that was talking about how police officers at the time, and this was 5-10 years ago, they took their own lives at the same rate as most middle-aged men. But that stat has now since changed, especially in the last few years, and they are taking their lives at a higher rate. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight, we're talking about the death of Officer Christopher Todd Horner in 1998 at Oakland Cemetery. This was in Haines City, Florida. And, you know, to back up what you're saying, the difference between an officer taking their own life and dying in the line of duty could be the difference between $20,000 and $1 million.
Imagine this scenario. You start your shift at 6 a.m. It's early. It's still dark out. You're looking forward to an easy shift, looking forward to a quiet shift, and all you want to do is drink your warm cup of coffee and not have to deal with anything too serious this day. You happen to notice a vehicle parked next to a cemetery. This is kind of your first thing that you have to deal with. And hopefully it's just an abandoned car, shouldn't be there. But Officer Horner goes to this car, check it out, and he actually contacts dispatch at 6:37 and says, I'll be out at 13V, which is a code for a suspicious vehicle, at Oakland Cemetery. No visible 28, meaning no visible license plates. Larger size, dark colored vehicle, maybe a Crown Vic. And the dispatch confirms the time, 6:38 a.m. That was the last time anyone heard from Officer Horner, right?
That's it. And they, of course, try to reach him for about 10 minutes. And there's a concern that grows. An officer is dispatched and arrives at 7:10 a.m. And this is when he makes a terrible discovery.
Officer Horner was found on Cemetery Road, about 500 feet east of North 10th Street. He was lying face down between his patrol car and a spot where another car may have been parked. He had been shot once in the head with his own gun. His 9mm pistol was found underneath his body. The bullet wound was by his left ear towards the back of the head. Right off the bat, you have an officer down, he's killed, and they're going to start a manhunt. They're going to treat this as a homicide investigation because he called in for a suspicious vehicle, and less than 30 minutes later, he's dead. Over 100 officers participated in a manhunt to search for his killer. They're from the Polk County Sheriff's Office, Haines City PD, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, Florida Highway Patrol, and the FBI even got involved. They released a composite sketch of a man seen running across a golf course near the cemetery on March 3rd, but wasn't the best sketch. And this is all they have. He said a suspicious vehicle, but no license plates. Looking at that, you could say, well, if this was a criminal who stole a car, they would take the license plates off. Or maybe the license plates were expired, so whoever had the car took them off. But there's no way to really track this vehicle, so they don't have a lot of leads.
The sheriff from the Polk County Sheriff's Office, Lawrence W. Crow Jr., held a press conference, and he said, "All we need is one phone call. It's obvious the officer took the gun out of the holster, but we don't know what happened beyond that. We think he got suckered. He was a good officer. We knew this was an area where they bring stolen cars, and he came up here, maybe thinking he'd find something. It cost him his life." And I take that to mean, this is an officer doing what he's supposed to do. He's taking a look at this area because it's a known area where criminals will congregate. And sure enough, he found something. And like you said, they're treating this as a homicide.
Hundreds of people attend his funeral on March 16th. His wife, Noreen, said at the reception, "Please stay safe. I don't want this to happen to anyone else." These are all cop families. This is everyone coming together.
Christopher Todd Horner was 35 years old. He had graduated high school in 1980, and he wanted to become an officer right away. But he couldn't get hired because when he graduated high school, he wasn't 21 yet, which was the age he needed to be. He served 11 years in the Navy and was honorably discharged in 1994. And he moved from Kissimmee to Jacksonville. And after graduating from the Florida Police Academy, he joined the Haines City Police Department in January of 1997. That was his dream. He wanted to be a police officer. And at this point in time, he had worked for the police department for 14 months. He had a wife, Noreen, and they had 6 children. He had 2 from a previous marriage, and she had 4. They had been married since 1996. So really, when you look at this Christopher Horner, his life was just getting started, and now he's gone.
Didn't take long, though, for allegations of suicide, or this was staged, to start coming out. There were some other police officers in the sheriff's department. A lot of speculation here. And this kind of goes back to Horner and his wife having a lot of financial troubles. He had almost $40,000 in credit card debt. He also had a $95,000 mortgage on a house in Jacksonville. And he went through a bankruptcy in 1997.
Some of you might be thinking, this could be suicide. He has a lot of debt. There were suggestions or allegations that his marriage was in trouble. But as far as the debt goes, that was actually forgiven in September 1997 by a bankruptcy judge. But Horner, you know, he was concerned about the debt, and he didn't want to go back into debt. So he was working as much as he could, and even worked part-time security at Disney and delivered pizzas. He was trying to bring in as much money as he could so that he wouldn't repeat his troubles. And he even had a manager at the pizza place he worked at who said he wore himself ragged. He was working as many hours as he could.
He's a police officer. He's doing security at Disneyland or Disney World. He's also a delivery driver. Three different jobs. And then you find out that his wife, Noreen, in 1998 was charged with fraud because she was collecting food stamps and government assistance the previous year. This is before his death. This is when they are married and he's working three jobs. She's claiming that they're not married. She's a single mother and she needs financial help from the government. She collected over $5,000 worth in government assistance, and they found out that she lied.
Yeah, she had actually filed under her previous married name.
Now, I'm not trying to bash her for doing this, but it's just one more check mark in the box of they were having financial problems. Even with him working three jobs, he was barely making ends meet.
Yeah, this doesn't surprise me. When you look at how much he was making about $25,000 a year as a police officer. They said he made $7 an hour at Disney World. And then being a delivery driver was making him about $5.15 an hour plus tips. And if you have six kids and a wife and a mortgage, yeah, this is a lot of debt that you're facing because just to feed everybody and get through a normal week. Yeah.
And then you look at the fact that he calls in a vehicle, doesn't give an exact description of it, doesn't have any license plates on it, and then he's killed with his own gun. This is raising questions for a lot of people. And as you stated before, if he dies in the line of duty, his family gets $1 million. If he dies by suicide, it's $20,000.
This is a huge difference in payment.
Sadly, it's a motive. Sadly, it's something that would drive a police officer to stage their own death. And it's horrifying to me because personally, I don't think there should be a difference. If you die in the line of duty, whether it's from somebody shooting you or car crash or even suicide, it should all be treated the same because obviously there's a problem here and your employer should be addressing it and taking care of you and your family.
Well, ideally, yes. I think, you know, when these rules are set, I think the people who came up with them are thinking, well, if they took their own life, that was their choice. And unfortunately, suicide is a complicated issue. And I think we as a society are still dealing with how to talk about it, how to deal with it. How many times have people on podcasts recommended, you know, if you're feeling depressed or if you need to talk to somebody, call this number. The way we describe suicide, people used to describe it as commit suicide, which is no longer the right thing to do because when you say commit, it sounds like you're involved in a crime. So I like the fact that we're thinking about it more. But I think there are other ways society and businesses or police office or police departments or the military, what have you, we have more work to do. So I get what you're saying. If an officer makes his death look like a homicide, knowing that his family will be better off financially, that's a motive. And that's why in cases such as this or in Sean Drent's case, you have a lot of people saying, hey, maybe this is not a homicide. But that's, like you said, it's really sad that this is a possible motive and it speaks to issues that we continue to deal with that probably, you know, something should be done about. But now that we're talking about Christopher Horner and whether he was murdered or not.
Because there was no witnesses and no information, all they had was the bullet fragments, powder burns, and gunshot residue, right?
That's what they had. And they also had where the gun was left. They also saw that there were tire tracks near his body.
He was right-handed, but the gunshot wound was on the left side of his head. Now, it's not impossible to shoot yourself with your offhand. It wasn't impossible for him to have done this himself. Now, he had gunpowder residue on his left hand, so it's possible he was the one that pulled the trigger, but the gun fell close to his knees when he fell over, or it was placed there. It might not be the most natural place for it to fall, but we don't know how he fell when this went down. So none of this really, at this point, shows suicide or homicide.
Sheriff Colonel Grady Judd spoke on this and said he believed it was a homicide. He said he had no information that suggested it wasn't. Now, because there is some dispute, there were at least two officers from the department who said they believed this was a suicide. Most didn't agree with them. But because of this, the sheriff's office put up a $50,000 reward for information and also contacted the FBI so that they could be involved and they could help with the investigation. So it was on March 11, 1998, when the investigation was transferred from the Polk County Criminal Investigations Section to the Special Investigations Section. And this is because they didn't really have any suspects, so they figured this was going to be what they call a long-term investigation.
And they were trying to somewhat appease the internal conflict and show that there wasn't any conflict of interest of them investigating one of their own and their findings, but that doesn't exactly appease the people that think this was suicide.
Yeah, we're going to get into that because it was on March 19, 1998, when the Sheriff's Office, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and the Medical Examiner's Office ruled this death a homicide. Now, the FDLE said it was suicide because they analyzed the murder weapon and the bullet wound, and the FBI agents had examined the gunshot residue, among other evidence. And it was said that because of the gunshot residue on Horner's sleeve and jacket, they could tell that the gun was pointed at him when it was fired, not pointed at his head. So it was held by another person, not himself, because of the way the gunshot residue hit his arm. Now, just for a moment, Justin, let's talk about how there were a couple of officers who believed it was suicide. You know, like I said, it was proven rather quickly that this was a homicide. There were some days there where it was in dispute, but they ended up filing lawsuits, and it wasn't so much because they felt like they were being ignored. It was because of what?
Retaliation. They said, we think this is suicide. Now, these aren't exactly the investigators on the case, and they felt that the police department retaliated against them for having said opinion, and they got sidelined, and they were told that their careers were in jeopardy if they didn't get on board with the homicide conclusion, which that's kind of crappy, you know, because I think people should be able to have a difference of opinion, but now this has gone into an internal power struggle of everyone needs to be on the same page and backing the blue and looking for this guy's murderer. And if you don't agree, then you're not part of the team.
No, but they were part of the unit that was involved in this case. So that's why when they were having their arguments that this turned into what it did. But it's a good question, because if they weren't part of that unit, they might have still faced retaliation. You know, because as you said, it's back the blue. We're on this side. You're not on our side. How dare you?
So now we have a lawsuit going on in the middle of this, and still no leads have come in. Still no suspects have come forward.
But that's part of the upset here, Justin, is there were some in the department, especially with the lead investigator here, who thought that because these two officers were so adamant that it was suicide, that it has possibly that ripple effect of, hey, no one needs to investigate this. If you have anything you need to tell the police department or the sheriff's office about this, don't worry about calling it in because it's a suicide.
We've seen similar cases like this, not involving a police officer's death, but just regular civilian deaths where they don't investigate it as a homicide because they took one look at it and said suicide and case closed.
And I think one of the officers here already had filed a lawsuit against this department in the past. And, you know, if I'm going to read into this, there is some idea here that perhaps the women who worked for this department didn't feel like they were given the same respect. And I have no doubt that this probably would play a bigger role in this than would be let on in the media, because these two officers, I mean, they had to know within days that they were likely wrong. But again, when you have everyone around you mistreating you because of your opinion, it's difficult. You know, there's a movie that does a good job of showing what happens, I think, and that's The Silence of the Lambs. You can see how Clarice Starling is not quite accepted. She's not on the same level as the men are in the FBI. You can tell there's a difference. Despite her qualifications, despite what she's capable of, it's not even considered. I'm not accusing this department of being a good old boys club, but it's possible. I mean, how else do these lawsuits go forward?
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So many years pass. Detective Louis Giampaolo took over the case in 2001. He looked into a Holiday Inn robbery that had actually occurred a few hours before Horner's death. And in 2002, an inmate that was in jail for unrelated charges actually confessed to the involvement of Officer Horner's murder. Now, just because an inmate comes forward and says, hey, I had something to do with that, you have to take it with a grain of salt, because some of these guys, they're ruthless killers, and they'll try to find anything they can use as leverage to get a reduced sentence or to get better treatment in jail. So this investigator, this detective, has to kind of go forward with this lead and find out if this inmate's story makes any sense and if he could have been at the scene of the crime when it happened.
This inmate's name, Christopher Gamble. And he was ready to talk.
He had been arrested and convicted of robbing an ABC liquor store in 1999 and sentenced to 20 years in state prison.
So they interviewed him. It was on March 8th, 2002, when he gave a confession. What did he say, Justin?
He confessed to robbing the Holiday Inn in Dundee, Florida on March 2nd, 1998. And they had planned to rob a nation's bank on the morning of March 3rd. They had recruited several people to help out with this, and one of them had stolen an Oldsmobile so that they could surveil the bank, stake it out. And they planned to use this car as their getaway car. They obtained masks, gloves, guns, and they went to the Oakland Cemetery to discuss and prepare for the robbery. They put on black clothing and began drinking and using drugs to, you know, kind of boost their confidence for this bank robbery. And just before dawn, one of the men left the car to go snort some cocaine and maybe relieve himself behind a tree. Now, that's when Officer Horner pulled up to this car full of these men. And who were they, Aaron?
Inside the vehicle were Christopher Gamble, Jeffrey Boyer, Andre Page, and Robert Winston. And like you said, Fowler was not there at the moment. So when Horner arrives, you know, he puts his flashlight on the car and he wants to know what's going on, because why are those guys out there?
That's when he called in to dispatch, but he only gave them as much information as he had. Dark, large vehicle, no plates, because it had been stolen and they took the plates off. Officer Horner, he's engaged them, he's talking to them, and Gamble sees Fowler coming out of the wooded area, and he starts talking to the police officer to distract him, and he's got his attention, and that's when Fowler came up behind him and grabbed his gun, and then all of the men jumped on Officer Horner and began beating him.
Now, Gamble says the reason why this escalated so quickly is because they were dressed suspiciously. It was very obvious that they looked like robbers.
Yeah. They're like, what are you guys doing out here wearing all black with guns and drugs and stuff? Well, we just thought we'd watch the sunrise, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, Gamble says something. He said that he told Horner that if he gave up his gun, nothing would happen to him. And Horner supposedly gave his gun to Fowler and said, Chris, why are you doing this? Now, apparently, Fowler says, Chris, why are you doing this? Because they knew each other. Gamble was known to everyone at the Haines City Police Department. And here's the sad thing. Throughout the years that they knew him, it was quite often that an officer would ask him how he was doing and attempt to help him out. Despite all this, Horner was still shot down.
In fact, when Officer Horner said Chris, the other men realized that they could all be identified. And so that's when they made up their minds, this guy's not walking away from this.
So Fowler ordered Officer Horner to get on his knees. And Gamble said, calm down. Don't worry about it. He only knows my name. But in the middle of this, Boye, who was in the vehicle, yelled out, kill him, essentially. And that's when Fowler shot Officer Horner in the head. So again, this is sad because Gamble and Horner knew each other, but that's maybe part of the problem here. So Horner became a big liability.
And Chris Gamble is the one that put the gun under Horner's body, hoping that it would look like a suicide. So we're looking at years later, one man finally comes forward with enough pertinent information and details about this crime that they're able to go through and start questioning and making arrests of all the other people that were present that night.
Right. And so Andre Page was arrested in December of 2002, but most notably in February of 2003, Christopher Gamble signed a plea deal with prosecutors. He agreed to plead guilty to 17 charges, and he would be fully debriefed, and he would testify against the other men. And so because of this, the prosecutors said, we'll recommend a reduced sentence because you're cooperating.
I'm sure that might make a lot of people upset, but this is the only way they can get someone to tell on or snitch on all their friends and actually bring justice to everyone that was involved that night.
Yet without his cooperation, does this case get solved? It's very questionable.
Yeah. I don't think we would have ever had an answer if he hadn't have come forward.
Now, Jeffrey Boye, he was acquitted of his robbery charge in May of 2003. Andre Page testified at his grand jury hearing in February of 2003, but he did not sign a plea deal. So even though you have Gamble cooperating, some of these other guys, they don't want to cooperate.
I mean, Gamble, he was getting hit with 14 counts and facing up to 107 years. But his sentence was reduced to 15 years for his cooperation, testifying against all the other guys.
That's a heck of a deal.
Yeah. Now, Charles Fowler, he was named as the shooter in May of 2004.
This is where Charles Fowler was first publicly named as the shooter as the murderer of Christopher Horner.
Gamble is admitting that he and the four other men were present at the killing, but it was only Fowler who pulled the trigger. And at this point, Charles had only been arrested on drug charges and not indicted for the murder.
So it's the assistant U.S. attorney who accused Charles Fowler of being the shooter based on the information they had received from Christopher Gamble. And really, this hearing, Justin, is to keep Fowler in jail with no bail. They really wanted to keep him around so they could build this case against him.
It's making the public a little upset. And the fact that the police never put him under surveillance is even upsetting other police officers going, why are we not going after this guy hard?
Andre Page was indicted on September 2nd, 2004. This was for murder and racketeering charges. And then on September 28, 2005, he was found guilty by a federal jury, guilty of murder and three counts of armed robbery. Now, Andre's family talked to the Tampa Tribune, which if you want to learn more about this case, the Tampa Tribune is a good place to go. They have a lot of articles on this case. And, you know, his family, they believed that he was there, but they didn't think he would ever be involved in a murder. So Andre Page appealed, and what's said in the Tampa Tribune, or at least it's suggested that because Boyer was acquitted, Andre thought he had a chance. But the difference was Boyer, he didn't cooperate. He didn't give them anything. Andre Page admitted that he was involved in the hotel robbery. So it wasn't as easy for him.
It's not until October of 2005 that Charles Fowler appears in court after his arrest. And the defense is trying to bring up Andre Page's trial from the week before, trying to bring him in as a witness. But, well, there's no honor amongst thieves and murderers. So Andre Page, he doesn't show up for trial. Fowler, he takes the fifth because he's not wanting to incriminate himself at any point, and he was hoping to bring in Andre as sort of, I don't know, his shield, as some sort of witness that would help him out.
Andre Page was sentenced to life plus 60 years on January 6th of 2006.
And then Robert Winston, the man that was doing coke off in the woods and came up behind Officer Horner, well, he was found guilty of being an accessory to murder on June 12th, 2007. He was sentenced to life plus 10 years for his involvement. September of 2007, Charles Fowler was indicted for the murder with the intent to prevent Officer Horner from communicating information about a federal offense to a federal law enforcement officer or judge. This is called federal witness tampering. And the offenses that he tried to conceal were the robbery of the Holiday Inn, conspiracy to commit bank robbery, and conspiracy to commit robbery, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and possession of cocaine and marijuana.
We're going to come back to this because this becomes kind of an issue later in terms of, you know, when you charge someone like this, you're saying the officer was murdered so that he wouldn't tell or report on this individual. And we'll get into that later. Now, Fowler's trial began on June 9th, 2008. The prosecution set out to prove that he fired the fatal shot. This is the type of trial where, given all the other evidence, they were able to be successful, Justin. He was found guilty of two charges, murder and preventing an officer from communicating information about a federal offense to a federal law enforcement officer or judge. And his sentence was life plus 10 years for shooting Officer Horner. Now, Fowler, probably at the under the advisement of his attorney, appealed his sentence. They really felt like they had an argument here pertaining to this preventing an officer from communicating information. And the U.S. Supreme Court, they vacated Fowler's conviction of intent to prevent an officer from communicating information about a federal offense to federal law enforcement. The vote was 7-2. Now, this appeal, the basic argument was there's no evidence or not enough evidence to prove he killed Horner so that he could prevent him from communicating on his federal offenses. And that kind of makes sense, Justin.
Yeah. They got him on other serious charges here, but this is just one where you can't say, oh, well, you shot and killed this officer with the intent of preventing him from doing his job or communicating to a federal officer. There was no evidence for that. I mean, some people might think we're splitting hairs here or the justice system is splitting hairs here, but this is how it's supposed to work. And he was there. He can be an accessory or the actual trigger man, but this was, I guess, what's the word? Superfluous. This was a superfluous charge.
Well, he was still guilty of murder. And there will be people who argue with this because they think, well, he killed somebody. Who cares?
Yeah.
But Justin, you and I do like to see how the law is followed because that's what separates us from having tyranny. And, you know, this is where things could be abused. You know, we could have a justice system that's even worse. You know, I mean, it has its good points, but this is one of those things where if they don't follow the law, we could have more problems. So all they're saying is that the government did not prove that this murder was as the result of preventing Horner from going to the federal authorities with information about these robberies.
Yeah.
So, and if you go by Gamble's own confession, it basically came about, this murder came about because the other men freaked out when they realized that Gamble and Horner knew each other. In other words, if he knows you, all the rest of us could fall like dominoes. It has nothing to do with reporting robberies. I'll say this though, Justin, I can understand why they charged him with this. I look at this and I think you could kind of follow the logic of, well, if he does get these guys under his control and calls in backup, then maybe that does happen. So I do understand that. And I'm not trying to go off the rails here, but it wasn't so easy for Horner to call in for help, not just because he was, you know, outmanned, but because he didn't have a working walkie-talkie.
And why not, Aaron? Because I personally think that you should just have a functional walkie-talkie, functional firearm, functional dash cam, functional, you know, patrol car.
This is a real question. There was an officer who he informed that his walkie-talkie wasn't working. And supposedly the policy is for that officer to get him another walkie-talkie immediately. But this did happen fairly close to the time that he discovered that vehicle. There was an officer who later faced demotion because of this.
It sucks because this is the reason. Like, this is the absolute example of, I don't have functional equipment, and less than an hour later, he's dead. And not going to say a walkie-talkie would have saved his life, but there's a chance that he could have called for help while he was being attacked. And even if it still played out the way it did, there wouldn't have been any question of suicide or homicide because you would have heard him struggling over his radio with other people.
That would have helped for sure.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Now, we already said the murder conviction stuck. And just because his conviction on this other charge was taken away, well, that doesn't mean that he was going to get out of prison.
No.
the judgment of the Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is vacated, and the case was remanded for further proceedings consistent with this opinion is what was said. Well, the court ordered that the case should be sent to the Atlanta Appellate Court to consider the issue. So when the prosecutors had to deal with this, they chose not to retry him on the federal witness tampering statute. They let that be. Instead, they resentenced him for using a firearm during a crime of violence to kill another person. They always have something else up their sleeve, don't they, Justin?
Oh, yeah. He was going to get it hard regardless.
Right. And to be honest, we may want the law to be followed, but that doesn't mean we have sympathy for Mr. Fowler here. And so when he was sentenced on November 1st, 2012 to life in federal prison, we were all for that.
And I think every single person involved with this case was an accessory. If you're witness to a murder, especially the murder of a police officer, and you don't report it, I think you have some sort of accountability for that.
We always try to find a bright spot in cases, Justin, and there is a bright spot here. In 2016, the roadway that goes from US 27 to the Haines City Police Department was renamed in Officer Horner's honor. And I think part of that was because, as another officer put it, this could have happened to any one of us. Just officer doing his job, trying to keep the area safe. And the officer who talked about that wrote a book. His name was Darren Freeman. He had worked with Officer Horner before. He wrote a book titled Darkest Hour, Not All That Is Buried Stays Buried Forever. I haven't personally read this book, Justin, but knowing that this officer patrolled with Officer Horner in that very cemetery at times, it gives him some insight. And I would think that no matter what, that book would give some additional information to people who are looking for it. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.